greet each of you in the precious and worthy name of our risen Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Also, just appreciate the body that we have here. It takes people to make up the body. It takes individuals. This morning I'd like to look at the book of 1 Samuel, and I'd like to ask some of the, maybe the front benches here, who are the three main characters in 1 Samuel? Benjamin.
David.
Okay, David, he's one. Who's another one? Michael. Saul. David and Saul. And the third one?
Samuel.
Thank you. Those are the three main characters in the book of 1 Samuel. This morning I'd like to look at the life of Saul. I'll probably do a series of messages on the lives of some of the kings that are recorded in the Old Testament, looking at the kings of the United Kingdom, and then when it separates Israel and Judah, we'll look at the southern kingdom, Judah, and some of the kings, and learn lessons from them. As we look at the history of Israel, Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt into the wilderness, and they wandered around in the wilderness 40 years. We think 40 years back then, you know, and it's just, it's not that long, but 40 years. I'm 40, 45, and for, you know, take 5 years off of my life, all of my life would have been spent wandering around in the wilderness. From our perspective, if we live 40 years, that's a significant period of time. And when Moses left the scene, he died. Joshua was the one who then led the Israelites into Canaan, conquered the Canaanites, and dispersed or settled, divided the land to the different tribes going to the different areas. And after Joshua left the scene, we enter the book of Judges, and it was a up and down, just sort of a seesaw, a time of revival and turning to the Lord, and the Lord would raise up a judge or a deliverer who would deliver them from whoever was oppressing them, and when they had their freedom again and the judge passed off the scene, we see this thing that the people again did evil in the sight of the Lord. It's repeated throughout Judges. And so it's just this up and down. And we come to the book of Samuel, and Samuel is known as the last judge of Israel. He was also known as a seer or a prophet, and he was very faithful in that role as judge and prophet. He gave a clear call to repentance to the people, gave them warning of what happens if they depart from following the Lord. And when the people demanded a king, he gave very clear warnings. This is what will happen to you if you choose a king. And in choosing a king, you're not rejecting me as a judge, you're rejecting the Lord. And yet, God told him to go ahead and give him a king. I'd like to just overlook give an overview of the life of Saul now. Soon. The life of Saul. In 1 Samuel 8, we have the account where Israel comes to Samuel and they demand a king. Give us a king. And Samuel gives the warnings, but the Lord tells him, go ahead and give him a king. And when in chapters 9 and 10, we have Saul anointed as Israel's first king. And in chapter 11, we have where Saul, he defeats the Ammonites in the first battle after he is king. And we see that when Saul is a humble man, he serves the people of Israel well. And that's one point I'd like to bring out, that humility serves. next we go into chapter 13 and Saul's first mistake of offering a sacrifice where God has, or Samuel warned him, don't do it, I'll come and sacrifice, but he didn't wait quite long enough. And so he went and offered the sacrifice, his first mistake that we read about. In the next chapter, we have Saul making a very foolish oath. Didn't allow the people to eat anything. Said, cursed be the man that eats until evening so that I can be avenged on my enemies. The Lord worked a victory working through Jonathan, but Saul made a foolish mistake. Later, Saul is told to destroy the Amalekites, and again, he doesn't completely destroy them. It is an act of disobedience. And soon after that, an evil spirit comes upon Saul. Disobedience separates people from God. In chapter 17, we have the account of David and Goliath. Saul isn't a main player in that chapter. Won't read too much about that chapter. But it impacts the ongoing relationship between David and Saul in the future. In chapters 18 and 19, we read how Saul's jealousy is directed at David, and he pursues David. In chapter 22, the priests of Nob are annihilated. Ahimelech, the priest of Nob, had helped David as he was fleeing from Saul. Innocently, he helped him, and Saul, in his jealous state of mind, was beyond reason, and he destroyed the priests of Nob. In chapter 24, we have Saul's life is spared by David. When Saul went into a cave, David could have easily taken his life, and yet he recognized Saul as the Lord's anointed and spared his life. In chapter 26, David spares his life again. In chapter 28, we have Saul in his desperation turns to look for a woman that has a familiar spirit who is at Endor, what we would call a spiritist or someone who deals with witchcraft. And there he receives the message that he and his sons will die and Israel will be defeated by the Philistines. And in chapter 31, we have the account of Saul's death. Invite you to open your Bibles to 1 Samuel. As we look at the life of Saul, I trust we can learn some lessons. They say experience is the best teacher, but remember, we can learn from other people's experience. We don't need to experience ourselves. We look at other people's experiences to help us make right choices. 1 Samuel chapter 9. In the previous chapter, chapter 8, Israel had demanded a king. Samuel gave them warning, but said, I'll go ahead and give you a king. In chapter 9, we have Saul, who goes looking for his father's donkeys who have strayed. Saul takes a servant and he looks for them, but they don't find them. And they come to a place, and the servant says, Saul, why don't we go to this nearby town where a prophet is, a seer, and ask him what we should do. And so Saul and his servant go, and they get advice, and there's an exchange with Samuel. I'll start reading in verse 19, 1 Samuel 9, verse 19. And Samuel answered Saul and said, I am the seer, go up before me unto the high place, for ye shall eat with me today, and tomorrow I will let thee go and will tell thee all that is in thine heart. And as for thine asses that were lost 3 days ago, set not thy mind on them, for they are found. And on whom is all the desire of Israel? Is it not on thee and on all thy father's house? And Saul answered and said, am not I a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Wherefore then speakest thou so to me? So when Saul gets the word that people are going to be looking to you for leadership, His first response is, am not I a Benjamite? If we look at the history of the Benjamites in the latter end of Judges, there was a town of Gibeah where a wicked deed was done, and Israel came to fight against Gibeah. And the Benjamites stuck up for the people at Gibeah. And there was a war, and all but 600 men were killed of the tribe of Benjamin. And so when Saul recognizes that the smallest of the tribes of Israel, it would be accurate. They were a small tribe. I'm not sure exactly where it fits in if you look at the Bible in order of chronology. My chronological Bible has it towards the beginning of Judges rather than at the end. But it still would have had an impact on the size that they are as a tribe. And I don't know where there are still people who might have looked down a bit at the Benjamites with a little bit suspicion and, you're a Benjamite, sort of that idea. And so I think Saul had a proper response here where I'm just a Benjamite. The smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family, the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin. Later, Samuel says, when thou wast little in thine own sight. That's when God anointed you, when you could be used. Now moving on to chapter 10, be reading the first 9 verses. Then Samuel took a vial of oil and poured it upon his head and kissed him and said, is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? When thou art departed from me today, then thou shalt find 2 men by Rachel's sepulchre in the border of Benjamin at Zelza. And they will say unto thee, the asses which thou wentest to seek are found. And lo, thy father hath left the care of the asses and sorroweth for you, saying, what shall I do for my son? Then shalt thou go on forward from thence, and thou shalt come to the plain of Tabor, and there shall meet thee 3 men going up to God to Bethel, one carrying 3 kids, and another carrying 3 loaves of bread, and another carrying a bottle of wine. And they will salute thee, and give thee 2 loaves of bread, which thou shalt receive of their hands. After that thou shalt come to the hill of God, where is the garrison of the Philistines. And it shall come to pass, when thou art come thither to the city, that thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place with a psaltery and a tabret and a pipe and a harp before them. And they shall prophesy. And the Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shalt be turned into another man. And let it be, when these signs are come unto thee, that thou do as occasion serve thee, for God is with thee. And thou shalt go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come down unto thee to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifice sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days shalt thou tarry till I come to thee and show thee what thou shalt do. And it was so that when he had turned his back to go from Samuel, God gave him another heart, and all those signs came to pass that day. I like that thing of God gave him another heart. What's all included in there, I'm not sure. But God was with him. He was a changed man. I think his outlook looked different. And those signs came to pass. In verse 8, it talks how Samuel will come down in 7 days to confirm the kingship to him. And we start reading in verse 19 now. Samuel addressing the people. And ye have this day rejected your God, who himself saved you out of all your adversities and your tribulations. And ye have said unto him, nay, but set a king over us. Now therefore present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and by your thousands. And when Samuel had caused all the tribes of Israel to come near, the tribe of Benjamin was taken. When he had caused the tribe of Benjamin to come near by their families, the family of Matri was taken. And Saul, the son of Kish, was taken. And when they sought him, he could not be found. Have you ever wondered, why did they use the lot? Samuel had already anointed him as king. God had clearly shown him, this is the man. But now they use the lot to show Israel who is to be king. And I've wondered what the response would have been of the Israelites if Samuel would have simply gone ahead and said, here's your man. A lot of Israel was probably still holding Benjamin responsible for some of the deeds they had did in the past, and they might not have seen it as an act of the Lord, except by the use of the lot here. Verse 22, therefore they inquired of the Lord further, if the man should yet come thither. And the Lord answered, behold, he hath hid himself among the stuff, or the baggage. And they ran and fetched him thence. And when he stood among the people, he was higher than any of the people from his shoulders and upward. And Samuel said to all the people, see ye him whom the Lord hath chosen, that there is none like him among all the people. And all the people shouted and said, God save the king. Then Samuel told the people the manner of the kingdom and wrote it in a book and laid it up before the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house. And Saul also went home to Gibeah. And there went with him a band of men whose hearts God had touched. But the children of Belial said, how shall this man save us? And they despised him and brought him no presents. But he held his peace. Saul is a tall, handsome man. It says from shoulders upward, he was higher than the rest of the people. So he stood out in a crowd. And as Samuel presented him to the people, at least majority of the people shouted out, God save the king. Yes, he is our leader. But there were some who said, how's this man going to save us? They didn't like him. But we see a commendable response from Saul. He was quiet. There are times when that's the best response possible, is to be quiet and not say anything. In the next chapter, in chapter 11, we have the first battle after Saul is anointed as king. Start reading in verse 1. Then Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh-Gilead. And all the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us, and we will serve thee. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, on this condition will I make a covenant with you, that I may thrust out all your right eyes and lay it for a reproach upon all Israel. Now these were quite the conditions of surrender. You may surrender on a condition, and I'll let you live, but I will poke out your right eye. Everyone. And the elders of Jabesh said unto him, give us 7 days respite, that we may send messengers unto all the coasts of Israel. And then, if there be no man to save us, we will come out to thee. They're saying, if no one rescues us, we'll agree to that term. I think it shows how desperate these people were. Then came the messengers to Gibeah of Saul and told the tidings in the ears of the people, and all the people lifted up their voices and wept. And behold, Saul came after the herd out of the field. Notice that phrase, Saul came after the herd out of the field, or as he was bringing the oxen home, probably working the field. Was that a kingly thing to do, working the field with oxen? We see him still he's a humble man. He's doing the work of a servant. But as he came out of the field, Saul said, what aileth the people that they weep? And they told him the tidings of the men of Jabesh. And the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard those tidings, and his anger was kindled greatly. And he took a yoke of oxen and hewed them in pieces and sent them throughout all the coasts of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, whosoever cometh not forth after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done unto his oxen. And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent. So I'm not sure what our response would be if we'd get a message like that. You come follow us, or Your animals will be butchered the way these pieces of meat are that are being sent to you. They came with one consent. And when he numbered them in Bezek, the children of Israel were 300,000 and the men of Judah 30,000. And they said unto the messengers that came, thus shall ye say unto the men of Jabesh Gilead, tomorrow by that time the sun be hot, ye shall have help. And the messengers came and showed it to the men of Jabesh, and they were glad. Now I think they were glad is sort of an understatement. It's not just, oh, that's a nice thing. This would have been exhilarating, exciting, jubilation. There was hope set in front of them that they didn't have before. And their response to Nahash, therefore the men of Jabesh said, tomorrow we will come out unto you, and ye shall do with us all that seemeth good unto you. And it was so on the morrow that Saul put the people in three companies, and they came into the midst of the host in the morning watch and slew the Ammonites until the heat of the day. And it came to pass that they which remained were scattered, so that two of them were not left together. The first part of Samuel's life, you're just like to bring out, when Saul was humble, he was small in his own eyes, God could work in a mighty way through his life. When we are humble, our humility expresses itself in how we serve. It's a position of service rather than controlling. And Saul was an excellent example of that as he started out being small in his own eyes. After this battle, the people sort of rally around again and say, let's confirm the kingship on Saul for real again. And some of the people told Samuel and said, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death. And again we see a commendable response from Saul. He said, there shall not be put to death a man. There shall not a man be put to death this day, for today the Lord hath wrought salvation in Israel. He would have had the following now. If he would have said the word, the men that didn't want him as king, their life would have been gone. But we see again a humble response of recognizing it's the Lord that won this battle for us today. And we don't retaliate against insults. And so they renewed the kingdom again. Going on to the next portion, disobedience separates. And we see how Saul starts making mistakes, direct acts of disobedience to directions that were given to him. I'm not going to have time to read all the accounts in detail. In chapter 13, verse 8, read several verses there. And he, Saul, tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. Maybe a bit of background. Early in the chapter, the Philistines are coming against Israel with a huge host. In verse 5, it tells us there were 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand, which is on the seashore in multitude. And the children of Israel were scared. But Saul had orders, don't offer a sacrifice, just wait until I come. That was a direction from Samuel. And he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee." I think we can also understand Saul's desperate situation to do something. In verse 15, it tells us there were about 600 men with him. And think of the host of the Philistines. And so he was desperate to do something. But it was an act of disobedience. As the story continues, the Lord worked through Jonathan to give victory to Israel as a nation. Jonathan and his armor bearer went and showed themselves to a garrison of the Philistines, and Jonathan had told his armor bearer, if they say it one way, that's an indication that the Lord is with us and he'll give us the victory. And so when they showed themselves, the Philistines said, "Come on up." And that was the sign he had asked for, and Jonathan and his armor bearer went up, and they started butchering men, killing them. And the ground started shaking. There was an earthquake. And the Philistines became confused and started beating down each other. And so there was a victory that day. Saul had made an oath, saying in verse 24 of chapter 14, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may be avenged on mine enemies." So none of the people tasted any food, but Jonathan wasn't along when that oath was made. And so as they were pursuing the enemy, they went through a wood and there was some honey on the ground. And Jonathan took his rod, put the end in and tasted it, and it was good. It gave him fresh energy. And the people told him what his father had said, and he just said, "My father hath troubled the land." In other words, that was a foolish thing to say, because if people would have eaten, there would have been that much more energy to go pursuing the enemy and getting a greater victory. Over in 43, Jonathan is found guilty of violating the oath. And Jonathan recognized, "Lo, I must die." And Saul answered, "God do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan." And the people come to the rescue and say, "Just a minute. Jonathan is the one who the Lord worked through to give us the victory today. Not one hair is going to fall to the ground today." And so the people rescued Jonathan so that he didn't die. In the next chapter, chapter 15, we have the second direct act of disobedience on Saul's part. Samuel tells Saul, "Go and fight against the Amalekites, and you are supposed to completely destroy them. Animals and people, everything. Don't spare." And so Saul went and fought against the Amalekites, and they were victorious. In verse 9, "But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fatlings and the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly." Saul saves the best of the things. And what is the response? In verse 13, "Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be thou of the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord." "Oh?" And Samuel said, "What meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" And Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." Sounds like a reasonable thing to do, doesn't it? Wasn't it just a terrible waste to get rid of all these animals? And yet it was the direction that God had given to Saul, and Saul was disobedient. And later we have Samuel's response in verse 22 and 23. Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king." And so we notice his the first disobedience, the pronouncement was, "Your kingdom won't continue." I think it's referring to his descendants and so on. In the second act of disobedience, it's, "You are rejected as king." And we see that this disobedience leading to separation is happening. Do we sometimes do the same thing as Saul? We justify a wrong act by saying we'll make up for it by doing this over here. Do we indulge in one area, whether it's overeating or looking at a movie that we really know we shouldn't, but we go ahead and do it? I'll spend some extra time in prayer, or I'll give extra time to Hands of Christ. God says to be obedient is better than sacrifice. We can't make up for wrongdoing. Disobedience is sin. Maybe another example, do we overeat sometimes and say, "Well, I'll spend some time fasting later on to make up for it"? Don't justify sin. Sin is sin. And when we disobey God, we can't make up for it. The only proper response is we humble ourselves and we repent. But we don't make up for it. As we look later in chapter 16, in the end, in verse 14, "But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him." That's a sad state to be in, when the Spirit of the Lord is departed. And exactly what this evil spirit from the Lord is, I'm not sure. Is it a depression? I'm not sure. We see Saul's servant's response. Says, "Saul's servant said unto him, Behold, now an evil spirit from God troubleth thee. Let our Lord now command thy servants which are before thee to seek out a man who is a cunning player on an harp. And it shall come to pass, when the evil spirit from God is upon thee, that he shall play with his hand, and thou shalt be well." And so they go and look for a man, and David is found. And in verse 23, "And it came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took an harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him." And so exactly what the evil spirit is, I'm not sure. It seems definitely a moodiness, a kind of depression that overcomes him where he isn't functioning very well. And as David plays the harp, it refreshes his spirit some way that allows him to function again. But we see that disobedience separates people from God. It happened back then. It happens today. We cannot make the same choices that Saul did and expect to keep a living relationship with the Lord. Going on to the next part, I think we'll jump over 17. I know that's a good story. Children like the David and Goliath story. But Saul is not the main character in that account. Going on to chapter 18. Starting in verse 6. "And it came to pass, as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women came out of all cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played, and said, Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. I suppose these women had no idea what they did when they sang these songs. But Saul, with the moodiness that he was in, this was not a good thing for him to hear. And from that day forward, he eyed David to get rid of him. And notice Saul's response to David from then. In verse 12, and Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. In verse 15, wherefore when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. Saul removed him from being his armor bearer and just made him a captain over 1,000. And the way David responded, it just made him more scared of him. In verse 29, and Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. Saul was very aware that the Lord was with David and that the Lord had departed from him. And it threatens his position as king, and he becomes jealous. And in that jealousy, there's a path of destruction that he leaves behind him. He was desperate to maintain his position of control through manipulation and through human means. And when we see our positions as places from which to control people, we're bound to have aspects of jealousy in our own hearts. In chapter 19, we have the first part, we have Jonathan temporarily pacifying Saul when he says, look, Dad, David laid his life on the line in fighting against the giant and bringing deliverance to Israel. He's innocent. Don't try to slay him. And Saul listened to him, and David came into his presence as it was before. But then there was a war again. In verse 8, there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and slew them with a great slaughter, and they fled from him. And the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul as he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin. But he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall. And David fled and escaped that night. So we see that just that fresh spirit of jealousy coming on him and taking control. Seems he must have been embarrassed as he patched that wall, trying to kill David. Innocent though he was. As we go on, David flees from Saul, and in his flight in chapter 21, he comes to Nob, and he asks Ahimelech, can you give me some bread? I had to flee quickly, and I didn't bring provisions with me. And there was the showbread there, gave him some of that, and David also asked, is there a spear or a sword here that I could have? And Ahimelech said, well, Goliath's sword is here. Take that. And David took it and left. But there was a man who saw it happen, Doeg the Edomite. And now we see some of Saul's, lack of common sense when he's controlled by his jealousy. In chapter 22, in verse 7, then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds, that all of you have conspired against me? Is that a true statement? Did they all conspire against him? No. See, the jealousy is sort of taking away the common sense, common rationale. that all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me, or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day? Then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Let's continue reading there. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob, and they came all of them to the king. And Saul said, Hear now, thou son of Ahitub. And he answered, Here I am, my lord. And Saul said unto him, Why have ye conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day? Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house? Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Be it far from me, let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father, for thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. And the king said, Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house. And the king said unto the footmen that stood about him, Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. And the king said to Doeg, Turn thou and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priests, and slew on that day 85 persons, or 85 persons, that did wear a linen ephod. And Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, and oxen and asses and sheep, with the edge of the sword. Folks, jealousy destroys. And typically when jealousy controls us, a lot of innocent people are implicated in that. We dare not let jealousy into our hearts. It blinds the mind to reason and common sense. And we get these false feelings that everyone is against us. In the next chapters, we have David fleeing from Saul, and two times David has the opportunity to end Saul's life, and he refuses, and he spares Saul's life. The first time, Saul responds with, Thou art more righteous than I. The second time, in chapter 26, he makes a very true statement in verse 21. After Saul realizes he could have been killed, but his life was spared, he says, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. And that was an accurate description of Saul's life there at the end. I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. After that, David goes to the Philistines. Saul stops pursuing him, but soon after that, the Philistines come against Israel again. And Saul gets the army together, and he inquires of the Lord, but there is silence for a response. And Saul, in his desperation, goes to the woman at Endor to get information. And I don't understand this scene, but it just says, Samuel responded this way to Saul and said, Today you'll be with me. You and your sons will be killed. Israel will be defeated. And Saul, at one part it says, where he just lay on the ground, almost no strength to do anything. But they got him to eat, and he goes back to his army. And in chapter 31, we have the battle taking place. Be reading just the first several verses. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul unto his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died, and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day together. A sad ending to a life that had started so well. The message you could have entitled, The Downward Road of Jealousy. Not sure what the best title was, I just decided The Life of Saul. How do we respond to these examples that are given to us? One question I asked, are people in leadership more prone to jealousy than other people? And I think it depends on how we view our leadership. And I'll just say this, men, almost all of you are in leadership of some kind. It can be church leadership, it can be serving on a board or a committee. If you're a husband, you're in leadership. And there are times if we view these positions of leadership as a place from which to control, our positions will be threatened and we'll be jealous. Now, God has a right to jealousy. The dictionary definition for jealous was intolerant of rivalry and unfaithfulness. And God has a right to that. But as humans, we don't. Not in this sense. And so if we view our positions as a place from which to control, we'll deal with jealousy. And may I say that most of us deal with it at some time or another? You know, just working with a team of pastors, if I come and I have an idea, it might be a good idea, but someone comes up with, tweaks it and comes up with even a better idea. What is my response to that? Does it threaten me? Or do I say, hey, that will actually serve the people better, and I'm glad for that tweaking or the new idea? When we're trying to control, it will threaten, and we'll try to stick with our position, even if it's not the best thing, the best idea. And I think it can happen even in the home. If we make a call, let's do this, and our wives say, well, could we maybe adjust it a little bit? How do we respond? Are we willing to see it? What will serve the family best? What will serve the church best? Or does it threaten the decision or idea that I had? And so, are people in leadership more prone to jealousy than others? I think it depends on how we view leadership. Do we see it as a place from which to serve people, or do we see it as a place from which to control? When we control, we'll be comparing ourselves who has the most control, and it'll be a vying for position. If we see it as a place from which to serve, I allow God to use my strength to serve the body. And when I see another brother with another strength coming alongside and utilizing his gift to serve in a way that I can't, I'm going to be happy and rejoicing that the body is being served through that method. And so, let's be humble. Let's see our neediness of God. We are not sufficient of ourselves. And secondly, walk in obedience. And as we do that, I don't think we'll go the path of jealousy that is destructive. It can be destructive in relationships, emotionally. It's just damaging all around when jealousy takes over. Let's not follow the path of Saul in that downward spiral, but let's be humble men and women of God. Shall we kneel and pray? Father in heaven, we thank you for examples that you give in Scripture, both positive and negative examples that we can learn from. And I pray that we would learn from these examples and not think that we somehow are an exception, that we can make some of the same negative choices without having similar consequences. So Lord, help us to have hearts that are humble, that we recognize our neediness, and to just simply walk in obedience.